So I'm decked out. It won't last. We'll see, because we'll start getting hot or something. But yeah, welcome to the equinox 2023. So we could include everyone on the planet. Some people are in the spring equinox, southern hemisphere. I believe we have Berta. Is it maybe in the southern hemisphere in Australia? So they're doing the fall equinox. There is different energies, of course, but it's holistic. We're on one planet, so we can celebrate both. And I wanted to thank Katie Fisher and Steve here at the Quantum School of Massage in Hawaii, and everyone here in person. It's been great. We've been doing level one for people online. Maybe some people online here actually are joining us who are there. But we have a great time. I wanted to thank Sid. People probably know Sid. She blessed me with these leis. So particularly, we thought it would be appropriate to wear here for this class. And yeah, and thanks everyone here in person and online for taking the time to celebrate together and to do a little bit of this training. It's kind of a little bit training oriented. So we'll get some new techniques or ideas that you can use, hopefully use in your spiritual and practical practice. So we'll just get started. And so we have both people online as well as in person. And just by seeing, there's probably some people who are just going to listen. I know many people are kind of in a later time zone, or so they're probably also resting at this moment. So yeah, a little bit about this and kind of how this class is set up. It's about 3 hours long. That's mostly because there's also a transmission, so we can kind of get energy and connect with the spiritual forces, higher beings, and bring that in. Of course, the whole class is being held in a energetic vortex, which we were talking about today in level one, for people who have taken Arcturian level one, the Arcturian healing vortex. So that brings in the downloads. And we have this very kind of special celestial time on the planet of the equinox. And that's kind of like, if you think of it, like a circle at the apex are the solstices. And then kind of at the two kind of middle points, midpoints are the equinoxes. So it's like a clock. So 12 o'clock is one solstice. And then the kind of the 6 o'clock is another solstice. And if you kind of set that up, the 12 o'clock solstice is the winter one. And the 6 o'clock one is the summer solstice. And then you have your fall equinox at 3 p.m. And then your let's see, your fall equinox at 9 p.m. And the way you can think about that energetically, if that's kind of a new idea, or a lot of people you probably hear have all celebrated, and we've tried to celebrate those celebrations. But the other thing to that diagram, just to finish it out so that we can kind of talk about that, is so let's say you cut the circle in half, from 9 p.m., 9 to 3. So then the idea is that everything above that line, you could say, is in the spiritual world. And then one way to understand it, and everything below that line is sort of in the physical realm. So one way to understand sort of this movement is that if you're at 12 o'clock, let's say we're talking about an incarnation. So you're totally in the spirit world at 12 o'clock. That would be the how this circle works. So like at the apex of the circle, you've kind of gone all the way back up. It kind of even directionally feels that way into the spirit world, your consciousness. And then you say, oh, I'm going back in. Or maybe you got kicked back in. Sorry, your angel said, you're going back. So then you kind of dip down. You dip down into 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, you're born. That would be symbolically where 3 o'clock is. And some people have heard this explanation, but it's kind of nice to do it again here, because this is actually what's happening in a yearly way. But I'll first describe this incarnational way. So at three, you would be representative of being born into the world. So now I mentioned the bottom half is physicality. You're now in your physical incarnation. So from three to six, if you can imagine that, that's sort of like, childhood, maybe is 3 to 4 p.m. or four, it doesn't have to be p.m. Then 4 to 5 maybe is like puberty, a middle age, adult, young adulthood. then when you hit six, you're at the midpoint of that incarnation. It could be middle life, what we call middle life. It depends on how long you've chosen to, you know, be in linear space-time. But six is kind of, you know, right at the middle of your incarnational life. Then from six to nine, you're going from this your second half of your life. So, you know, six, seven, eight, and then nine, you pass from your physical body. So you still exist, you know, just keep going around and around, but you're not in your physical form anymore. You're in your consciousness spirit form. So that's why now we're ascending back, which kind of helps you remember. So from 9, 10, 11, 12, maybe like 10 for people who studied maybe some esoteric ideas about death and dying, you're shedding all your other subtle bodies, like the astral body. You're becoming pure light, which is what we're going to get to here with the resurrection body and rainbow body. But you're becoming pure, like frequency, which we talked about today. So then by the time you hit 11 and then you're back at noon or 12, you're just pure consciousness, you're pure frequency, you're pure light. You're actually the rainbow body. So one of the themes I'll bring up here, because the theme was about, you know, resurrection body, rainbow body, which is kind of appropriate to the spring equinox if you follow esoteric Christianity, or Christianity, kind of the Christ, the idea of Christ celebration, is we're already the rainbow body. You know, like the 12 o'clock position, we are already light. We're kind of like trying to actually in the yogic or processes, I'm kind of jumping to a little bit about that. We're sort of bringing that into physicality. That's what those yogic processes do, or we're kind of remembering who we are. But we're all going to go back to that, you know, like if you believe in this kind of continuous recycling or recycling or cycling. So we will go back to a frequency, a more light-based body completely. But the idea is like, how much can we bring that here into this world, which is very important evolutionary, supposedly, as people might know. And are doing in different ways, like energy healing, for example, brings the light here into the physical world. Okay, but to finish that, so that was using the circle as a form of understanding incarnational process. But now I mapped the solstices and the equinoxes. So how does that work? And then by understanding how the solstices and equinox maps onto that same circle of incarnations, you can kind of understand what you're kind of celebrating here on a, yeah, it's interesting whether you consider like on a, I don't know if it's a microscopic level because the death reincarnation cycle might be the macroscopic level, but like on a celestial earth level, how does that resonate with what you're doing as a soul incarnationally? So just to reiterate, the winter solstice would be at 12. Then the summer solstice is down at, six. So how does that work? Winter solstice, or this, as people might know, is where it's most dark. So less sunlight, and it's most darkness. But in this kind of circle, I mentioned the most physical incarnated portion is down in the second half. So you actually are, there's less physical light at 12. That's where you have the least physical light. That is what's represented by the winter solstice. We're the least physical at 12 in terms of the incarnational cycle, but we're actually the most spiritual. And that's why in the winter solstice, whatever hemisphere you're in, because that's kind of the light dark cycle, you actually can do the most spiritual work, because even though there's less sunlight physically, there is more spiritual light because it is complementary. So when you do any kind of internal practices, you know, you're going inwards. So the planet is helping you do that at that moment. So a lot of people will celebrate winter solstice and then have like a retreat or do their own spiritual practice. Like we do the 12 holy nights. People have done that. There's a reason to like plan your spiritual maybe year that way, because even though there's not a lot of physical light, you kind of want to go in, you want to retreat, you want to kind of hibernate, you want to go internal. It's all going to help you do that. So there's more spiritual light. So the same thing when you're fully excarnated, you're completely in the spirit world. You're all spirit, but there's no physical matter. There's no physical light. Now, back down to the 6 p.m. would be, or 6, summer solstice. So that's boom. That's like, it's like, let's go to the beach. It's like Hawaii might be like that maybe all the time, but probably not all the time, right? I just as a visitor think that. But in the summer, you know, you think sun, we're going out to the beach, we're going out to the lake, we're going out. And it's exactly the same thing. You're out in the physical world. So at six in this incarnational cycle, you're at middle age. That's usually like, you know, you got over all your pimples. I'm being nice. There are other things that were happening during puberty, but you got over your pimples. You got over, you know, you got your job. You know, maybe you're earning some money now. You know, you're away from your parents. You're like, you're kind of usually full force. So that's the same thing. You know, the sun, you're full sun. So that's summer solstice. That's six. So you're fully incarnated and kind of really raying out into the physical world. But you wouldn't kind of hold a retreat, although some people still hold retreats in the summer. But it's kind of like you kind of have that impetus to go outwards. And that's the planets helping you. Oh, hey, come on in. Come on in. Oh, we got some people. Okay, so now we're at the equinoxes, actually. So that's half-half. It's always half-half, right? So half sunlight, half darkness, it's equal. And we looked it up. If anyone's interested, which is good because something can happen right at the time. It's actually not right tonight. In Hawaii, it's 11:24 a.m. And I'll put this in the chat. In the Pacific Standard, it's 2:24 p.m. Hopefully, sometimes I lose an hour when I write it up. It's 5:24 p.m. on the East Coast. And then for those in Europe, it would be 9:24 GMT. And there's something you could do outside, actually. Like, I'll just say, like, you know, you could go out, just maybe be in the sun, if there is the sun, or just be outside. And, you know, you could even try to meditate and have your meditation kind of hit that particular time, because that is unique on the planet. Like, it's got a particularly right half daylight, half sunlight. Okay, so I mentioned, just to finish this off, and then we're going to go more into what we're doing here tonight, but just kind of the context of where we are celestially. 3 p.m. was spring equinox. So that means you're kind of, you're half-half, same as fall, but you're ascending with more light. You're going to be more external light because you're moving into summer solstice. So that's kind of when you're born. So that's kind of a little bit like the resurrection, you know, coming out into light. So when you celebrate things in the spring equinox, like spring cleaning, you're cleaning up, and that all Easter was all about, like they had a lot about the eggs, the Easter eggs. Should we do an Easter egg? But the egg is like the birth, you know, you're kind of birthing out into something new. So that's usually spring. And of course, the planet for people who are experiencing spring is like the buds are now flowering, going to flower fully in the summer. So usually you time your spiritual work along that kind of that what's helped with the planets helping you to do. Whereas in the fall, it is equal, but now you're going into darkness. You're going to go into more, at least physical darkness, which means actually more spiritual light, because, you know, summer, winter solstice is kind of like the big portion for that spiritual work. And that's usually for people who've done the Arcturian healing method. That was consciously chosen, that the new level is always given or tries to be given during the winter solstice. Because just for people who are interested in this, maybe you do this with any kind of building. And I learned this in biogeometry, and, you know, like the Egyptian temples have this. What's happening celestially, whenever you complete your building, whatever, or your project, but let's say it's an actual building like the pyramids, or it could be like a building like this school here. Whenever you put like the cornerstone in, like it kind of signifies the completion, whatever's happening celestially gets imprinted into the information field of that structure. So you kind of can time things so that, you know, maybe you want it on the winter solstice, maybe you want it on the spring equinox. And you can do that with non-physical things, you know, because Arcturian class is a non-physical information field, but it still works temporally. So if you have a project, you kind of bring something out, like a book, maybe you try to hit it, you know, like bring it out, whatever you decide is when it's coming out, on maybe one of the, like spring equinox would be great. That's because that's a birth on the planet. So it'd be a birth of your book. Okay. So yeah, so fall, you know, it's half half, but you're going into more of the spirit world. So that's kind of going into more darkness on the physical plane, but more spiritual light. So you kind of celebrate different things on fall equinox, whichever hemisphere. But just to mention, usually if you follow like an esoteric Christian, they also follow this, like, you know, we're basically they'll sell and other traditions, but I'll just use that. Spring equinox, you have Easter around there. And the way you can actually know when Easter falls is you find the spring equinox, you find when the next full moon is around that time. And then the next Sunday, they always put Easter, like Catholic Church or Christian Church will put Easter on that. That's usually how that's. So it kind of like spiritual traditions understood probably the esoteric reason, but exoterically, outwardly, you'll see all the celebrations that will fall also on these celestial times. Obviously, winter solstice, maybe to kind of go backwards, you have all the like December celebrations like Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah. So those are all kind of around winter solstice. Then let's see, summer. What's going on in the summer? Besides beach parties. I have to think about the summer for the spiritual one. But the fall, what I was trying to go with the fall is that's one of the Christian celebrations that's not based on the Christ. It's actually called Michaelmas. That's when they celebrate, like most esoteric Christian groups and probably exoterically celebrate St. Michael or Archangel Michael's celebration. But Archangel Michael is like the face of Christ, so the countenance of Christ. So whenever you kind of tune into Archangel Michael, you're already going back to the Christ being or the solar logos. So it already resonates you to that being. So but these are just interesting facts just to kind of put this in context. Okay, so hopefully we didn't go into a vortex where I talk too fast, maybe too much air element here. So I'll try to connect back to the earth. Okay. So why don't we get into what we're kind of celebrating here, or the topic for today. And you can see people have been sort of following some of the classes very closely that I've been doing. This is kind of download maybe that's happening for myself. Maybe I'll give a little personal reflection on why this was kind of maybe the topic or why it's coming through. You know, the Easter is the resurrection, so that kind of does fit. But there's been this interesting study more from a more energetic alchemical view. That's where personally kind of where I geared into it, not only from the esoteric Christian view. As you can see, like if you got the notes, a lot of these are Tibetan mantras, but the phenomena, and there's other traditions like the Tamil tradition has this idea. But the idea is that certain practitioners or human beings can go in from basically be filled with so much divine light that they kind of transform their physical body straight back into light. And so whether you call that a resurrection body, whether in the Tibetan and Taoist tradition, they call it the rainbow body, if you've heard of that, you're basically the phenomena that's been recorded, and it's been recorded in modern times, so it's not maybe only legendary, like maybe no one was there, or we don't have 100% physical proof that Christ had the resurrection, but maybe we do with the Shroud of Turin for people who've studied that, where they have this imprint of supposedly a human being who went like completely like a burst of energy, and then there's a human form on this shroud. So, and there's some debates whether how real it is or when it was the carbon dated correctly and so forth. But a lot of people feel like that was probably the representation, the physical evidence of Jesus going directly into light or the resurrection. But the rainbow body is quite recorded throughout history in the Tibetan tradition, and I also mentioned the Taoist, as well as the Bon tradition. And they actually have yogic practices to accomplish that, which we'll talk about, which we're actually going to, you know, have some ways to start that. And then it's really, I'm always emphasize the principles behind things, and then you can find out your own practices. Like I'm sure not everyone here necessarily resonates or feels like the Tibetan tradition is your particular lineage, but we could look at what they're doing, their practitioners are doing, and then you could say, oh, this practice here that I'm learning, either in a modern form or in my own tradition, yeah, this actually fits that category, like whether that be like sound or light, which we'll get to, or like extending lights out. So into like the astral. Okay, so basically the idea is like to give you an example, and I kind of mentioned these three forms of the rainbow body. A practitioner who knows how to do this, let's say in that tradition, when they know they're about to die, so they probably have that perception, meaning they know when they're going to pass, or they actually choose when they're going to pass from their physical body, they'll say, okay, I'm just going to go into my own room. Don't bother me, because the process has to be kind of maybe very contemplative. And then the next day when the person comes back, or there are people who are taking care of them, they're either the full rainbow body would be, there's no physical body. There's no even remains there. So it went directly from the physical molecular process straight into light. The thing, if you hear people who've taught about the rainbow body now, like I've had some teachers in the Tibetan tradition who've talked about that, they basically say that, just to reemphasize, you're not acquiring anything new, because we're already that rainbow body when we're at 12 o'clock, like I was saying. So, but it's, the question is, could you take all that light and fully incarnate it into the physical body? That's what the yogic practices do. Okay, so then there's two other versions that I'll just mention. So there's that's called the great rainbow body. Then the small rainbow body is kind of partial. Most of their physical elements go directly back into the spirit world or the light form. And they kind of show up having passed from their body, but they're like a dot, like a size, a shrunk. But there's still some kind of a physical form there. So it kind of, maybe it's like 1 foot or 2 feet, like a doll almost. And then finally, if people have read this book, and I'm just going to say it now, and then I'll recommend it again, if you're interested in more academic, but kind of look at the comparison amongst different traditions of this light body phenomena. It's called The Resurrection Body by Father Frank Tiso. And he actually studied a very modern version of the rainbow body in Tibet. He actually went there, interviewed all the people around that. And this one Lama there achieved a great rainbow body. And then his student achieved small rainbow body. But they had the evidence of the kind of the remains, and something went wrong. Actually, probably that student could have achieved full rainbow body, but someone interrupted the process, so it was a small rainbow body. It's like you're doing your thing, and someone like knocks on the door, but it's not just making a cup of coffee kind of thing. So, but Frank Father Tisa said that actually was helpful for them. Because they knew something really can happen. Because some scientists still are wondering, like, is this just like fable? You know, like, but they had evidence, you know, because it was some part of the body was still there. So the reason, and I'm just going to jump to this now because it's coming, you know, like, why would you do that? Like, even if you, let's say we could achieve, it's maybe like an Olympic level of, you know, like if you're a runner, this may be like Olympic level running, or at least elite level competition, like, you know, it's like the highest form of your endeavor. Why would you do it? Is it just to be cool? Like, you know, but actually it's done out of compassion. You know, it's done out of compassion to like show what's possible to usually those, you know, in fact, it might actually be an ingredient to actually be achieve it. It's really, the basis is compassion and love. And maybe it won't be possible to actually do that. And teachers have emphasized that. But the reason why a teacher would, you know, because some of these beings, they don't have to do the rainbow body. They can just die naturally and be in a kind of they call it tukdom, or like a clear light state. They don't have to do the whole transformation, but they do it to usually leave to those who kind of have, they've been a model for, like, yes, this is what's possible. If you do the practice, if you kind of follow like an authentic path, this is what you can do. So that's usually why they'll do it as a demonstration. And there's other reasons afterwards where their presence is omnipresent in a sense. So I just wanted to reemphasize that when we get to the kind of like the nitty gritty or what's made up of this practice. Okay, so that's small rainbow body. And then finally, there's what's called subtle rainbow body. And that's basically the after, you know, the person's left, what they leave is a hair and nails and teeth. So the kind of things that maybe are conscious, but are kind of less, maybe less full of energy, because those are maybe like forms of a cell that we're kind of sloughing off, like our skin or our nails in particular, and hair. Okay, so those are like three modern forms. Now, getting to, let's have a pause. Is there a question? Yeah.
Small rainbow body.
The small rainbow body is like not full, like almost like vaporization. You know, there's still some form of a body, but it's shrunk. So some of the mass transformed into light, directly into the spirit world or light. So it kind of looks like a shrunken body. Yeah, but very small. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like partial. Yeah, like if it was like. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was recorded. Anything else? Anything online? Okay. Any questions? Okay. So that kind of establishes kind of the phenomena. And there's probably more to say, or I've probably said more in some recent classes. And if something's interesting about the background, but the question is: So, what's the process? Yeah. What's the mechanism? Because if you're in a tradition like I'll mention some traditions that actually have the yogic process even now. So the Tibetan tradition has it. Within the Tibetan tradition, the Nyingma school has it, and a lot of it's associated with. And these are just terms so that you've heard them, and maybe if you do a search, you can find those things more on your own. And I'll put some references. Dzogchen. A tradition has this, and I'll mention why it's in within that tradition in Tibetan Buddhism. Dzogchen is considered like a pinnacle level of Buddhist practice because it's like a non-dual practice. You're really just meditating less with form and more with lights, like we're going to talk about, and more with the non-dual state of consciousness, like the ground consciousness. Bon, which was basically the spiritual shamanic tradition in Tibet before Buddhism came, also has a lot of recounts of the rainbow body and a very systematic way of what practices are done to achieve rainbow body. Some of that, I think, is even published. The kind of head of the Bon tradition had all that published and translated into English, more for preservation's sake. So, and then one of the aspects that we'll talk about as a practice, if you've ever heard of this, is something called the dark retreat. So I've seen it in Taoism, like Mantak Chia. He has this center. He's a very, like a more well-known Taoist teacher. He's not the only Taoist teacher, but very well-known. He has a center in Thailand. They have a dark retreat. Whether they're trying to achieve rainbow body or not, he may call it something different. But that's like a form of dark retreat. A lot of Tibetan centers now, because people are practicing so much and getting to such a advanced level. So practitioners pull what's available, as you practice more, then the tradition will kind of reveal more publicly or reveal more, have more accessibility. So more and more Tibetan centers are actually having dark retreets. Like I know there's people have heard of the Kala Chakra. They're having actually a Kala Chakra dark retreat, which is like phenomenal to even have it talked about. But they're like one of the main teachers who's based in Australia, he's actually having one dark retreat in Colorado and one in Austria, and that is actually the very intense practice to form their rainbow body in those traditions. So I'll have to give more context, but I just want to kind of put those out there right now as like, how do you actually do this? Like, is it just fable, or am I never going to be able to learn cognitively the practices? But the thing is, it is out there. It's out there, and people are doing those practices, and it is available. So if you have that intention, I think you can in this incarnation find those practices. Let's say in that tradition. In other traditions, I just have to investigate more. Okay. So what is the mechanism? So usually it's really made up of three things, and maybe we can go to the notes. And this is more principle now. So maybe you're interested, in this. Maybe you feel like you're doing it. Maybe it's like I'm trying to say, it's your natural birthright. But more you're like mystical Judaism, like that's your path, or you're a Sufi. But you could see how maybe they have a version of this. Maybe your teachers in that tradition know about it. Maybe they don't. But that first thing right under on page one, I'm not sure it's paginated, but it says sound, light, and rays. So those are the principles. That's the practice. So you're basically, and this comes from the Tibetan framework, transforming your elements. So your elements are your kind of psychophysical, physical etheric building blocks. And we kind of talked about this a little bit in level one. And I've talked about this a lot, and it's kind of embedded in the Arcturian healing method. There's a shamanic version, like the Iceland retreat that's coming up is all about the elements. So there's all this downloading of information that's coming together kind of in things I'm facilitating. So there's that, this universal field coming down. But the five element kind of framework here in the Tibetan tradition, in also esoteric Western tradition, is the kind of going from more subtle to more dense, space, then air and wind. Sometimes they call it wind because air tends to be, they want to have that moving component to it. So it's not like just stagnant or still. And then fire, and then water, and then air. So we have all those in our physical body, and we can kind of talk about there. And then there'll be a practice where there's certain organs. If you study the Chinese medicine tradition, those are the yin organs, but this is also from the Tibetan tradition. But there are certain organs that kind of hold that energy, which we'll talk about. So just to mention that really quickly. So like these are your solid organs. So like wind is associated with lungs. That kind of makes sense, air, lungs. Maybe some that aren't as maybe self-evident, at least when I first learned it, was space is associated with your heart, your physical heart, not the heart chakra, which we'll talk about later. And then fire in this framework associated with your liver. And then water is associated with your kidneys. And that kind of makes sense, you know, the urination and so forth. And then finally, or a way to remember it. And then finally, the earth element is associated with the spleen. So these are kind of the five, they call it in the Chinese medical tradition, five yin organs. But in this Tibetan tradition, which kind of has some maybe similarities, they're the same kind of organs associated with those elements. I haven't, maybe Katie can say later, but I haven't looked at or studied the elements. They really have a different element system in the Chinese medicine because they have like metal and wood. So, but those organs are probably associated in their elemental system with certain of the elements, but they don't follow the strict one I just mentioned. They have wood and metal elements within that framework. Okay, so what you're doing here is you're transforming the elements with a sound and color, or that's the lights, and then rays is like sending out these energies. So So what's the sound? So we're mostly frequency. Our channels are made up of frequency. So that's why many people here probably worked with mantras, whether that was some Sanskrit mantras or even English mantras. But particularly in this Tibetan tradition, Hindu tradition, using Sanskrit sounds has a certain vibration already embedded within it that will open up the energy body by saying those sounds. So in what we're going to go through, just as an example, you may feel drawn to use these mantras. They're more to first give people a sense of, okay, these are the sounds this tradition uses, kind of the sonic tones that open up and can transform, the elements can transform the channels. And so we'll go through that. But that would be a version of the practices. And what I've tried to provide are actually the authentic practices that you would use to start transforming your elements, letting them carry more light. Or the way I would think about it, you could say you're transforming them, or you're helping your elements remember who they are. You're kind of going back to your original rainbow body, rather than thinking like I'm acquiring something. It's more like you're remembering something, or like revealing something. It's almost like you're shaking element, anything that's kind of not its original vibration in our incarnational path here, with, you know, kind of different things going on the planet that we ingested or we got near, and then you're kind of shaking it off so that you reveal back to its original form. Okay, so that's the sound. Those are the mantras, and we'll go over that. Then the lights. So this is actually, in a lot of tradition, the way they work with lights is with color. So this, we were talking about this before, the astral body, when you are meditating or receiving healing, I was talking about this in level one, and but it's appropriate here. If you start to see lights or colors in your vision, then it's like your astral body is being affected. But you can create lights and colors simply with your intention. So when you see green coming out of your hand, or green color filling up, like in this case, that would be, we'll get to this, but just so that we're kind of already following the pattern here. Green is the wind, air element. You use the green color. And I mentioned the wind is like your lungs. So you could imagine your lungs, the wind up filling like your green, emerald green filling your lungs. So you're transforming your lungs when you do that. So you're using color with your intention. We call it your visualization, but that's how the light, that's how you create the frequency of light. So like if you've done pranic healing or done any kind of chi healing, the way you like use red is you actually imagine a red light coming out of your hand, and that would be the prana. Your consciousness has changed the frequency of the prana, but by your intention and your visualization. So same thing. So that's how you create the lights. In these Tibetan practices, the people have heard of Vajrayana, which I've talked about, you're sometimes initiated into a deity. It's not only, that's where I've seen it most. There may be a Hindu version of that, where you might be initiated into Kali, where you can actually arise as Kali. That's part of the practice. But like in the Tibetan tradition, if you're initiated into Medicine Buddha, did you talk about Medicine Buddha yesterday? Oh, no, that was someone. Oh, someone else wrote. Yeah. Okay. Someone was talking about Medicine Buddha. Yeah. But you can be initiated into Medicine Buddha. And then then you would practice, basically, that Medicine Buddha sort of merges with you. And then you imagine yourself as a being of light. You're made of like a lapis lazuli light as Medicine Buddha. So this would also qualify as a practice, that would move you toward achieving the rainbow body. That would be under lights. So that would be, I'm not saying to some of the Tibetan teachers I study, they said, don't create chop suey. Well, I'm Chinese, but yeah, maybe I can say that, or of origin, but like, don't create your own cocktails. So they're like, don't take the traditional practice and then kind of make it your own. Not that I've done that, but I'm just saying, like, in case you learned your, or even, downloaded your own practice where you imagine yourself in some kind of light being form, that would kind of fit the principle of the second one, where you're already visualizing yourself going back to light. So, and then finally, rays. What's rays about? Rays is your interconnectedness. So, I'll talk about this in a second. There's kind of, the rainbow body, just to kind of earmark this, is really a form, a physical form of enlightenment. Yeah, that's another way to think of it. And so there's a mind form, there's kind of an energetic form, and then there's a physical form of what would be considered like a high frequency awakened mind. So we'll come back to this principle. But rays is like you would imagine, so just to review, sound would be like you hit a tone. It doesn't have to be a Sanskrit mantra. It could be a tone you were downloaded with, like an inner tone. And you just keep working with that tone inside yourself. You got the memory of it. And you kind of like feel the vibration. You just kind of keep meditating with it. That would be sound. So you're opening up, shaking off. And just similar to psychotherapy, you're creating this unique, purified, all the way down to the physical cells. Vibration. Now lights, you imagine colors coming out of you or a body of light, any practice that's like that. Then rays is that light extending out of your, what you would consider your self vehicle. So if you see a light in your lungs, I said it was emerald green, and then later on we'll learn this practice, then you see it like radiating out. And so then green light's completely filling this space, which is part of the practices. then because you're blessing the space, you know, like, and we do that with, you know, you could channel Arcturian healing light onto the space. You're basically doing that same thing. I didn't talk about it in this context, but, or maybe you've learned another modality where you've cleared spaces with energy. But anytime you then take those lights from your light body and send it out, bless others, bless the environment, bless the elements out in the environment, you're doing this third principle raise. Okay, let me pause there, and then I'll go to this idea of the awakened mind, awakened energy, and awakened body, just so we get a little more context on that. And that will also help in the development of the rainbow body, like what, because there, it's not just the alchemical transformation of the elements as a, let's say, half of it, but the other half is like your kind of your consciousness. What level of consciousness are you bringing to that? Any questions up to there? Okay. Yeah. So yes. So this was actually taught to me by his name's Tenzin Wangyal. I've recommended in another context his Dream Yoga books. So he has it's almost like a classic on sleep and dream yoga. In case you're interested, there's a Tibetan sleep and dream yoga. And he has a revised version of that I was recommending in some recent classes, like the Immortal Body or the Level 11 class. I think we did a practicum on that where I recommended that book, the revised version, because he added quite a lot. He also has a five element Bon. He's from the Bon. He's a Bon Lama. So in case you wanted to explore Bon Buddhism, which is kind of the shamanic, it was there 20,000 years ago. You know, supposedly it's like ancient, like super ancient. And Buddhism came to Tibet in the 8th century. So we're talking, you know, very long ancient lineage. He has a book on five elements. And I didn't get a chance. I have it, but I didn't get a chance to relook at if he actually talked a lot about the rainbow body in it. But anyways, he did teach about the rainbow body recently. And one of the things he did say back to this is that part of it is your state of consciousness. And the state of consciousness is basically overcoming what he calls the conditioned mind. And I want to just spend a little bit of time on that. It's sort of like, and we are kind of referring to it in level one, I was calling it, you have this, what I call the chatter mind. It's like you're a super commentator. But we think that's actually reality. Like, oh, Gene's talking and I'm taking notes and this is kind of cool, but I'm not going to do that. No. You just kind of have this ongoing conversation. And for most, you know, I'm including myself there too. Not that I'm any special or anything, but, you know, we think that that's reality, you know, and that's what's real. But actually, that's just a commentary on our experience of reality. So then there's another level of mind. And, you know, in these traditions that I've identified it, I was calling it the superconsciousness today in class. We're trying to delineate kind of this wording, but sometimes they call it the natural mind. Sometimes they call it the awakened mind. This is what Dzogchen is trying to get at. And they're trying to say it's your natural mind. So it's not like you have to try to do something. It's more that you have to stop identifying with that commentator, because in some ways you can't get rid of the commentator, but you can just not pay attention to it or identify more with this ground state. So where do you see this natural mind? And that's good to know. Like, I thought these were very helpful insights that these teachers gave. One is in between the gap between thoughts. So when the commentator has to take a drink, wait, let me get some water here. When the commentator has to take a drink and stops, when your thoughts stop in that gap, it can be, you know, milliseconds, it could be the longer, maybe when you do meditative practice, it gets longer and longer, maybe not in the beginning, because you're kind of more aware of all the commentator's thoughts, then that gap is the awakened mind. That is the enlightened mind that they call the Dharmakaya in Tibetan Buddhism, if you studied that. We can talk a little bit about that framework. That is, it's there. It's in deep sleep. If you can become awake during deep sleep, that's what the sleep yoga is about. You're pretty much like, there's no images, there's really no thoughts, you're just kind of purely aware. So that's another portion. When you first pass from your physical body, you enter what they is called like a clear light of death state, similar to this clear light of sleep state. That's another period where you have that. You know, those are kind of more special. It's like, oh, I got to wait till that. No. You try to identify it now. So anyways, kind of when you can find those quiet periods where you, between thoughts. The other place, speaking of breathing, you know, some people here are expert in breathing and are working a lot with breathing. On any breath hold, you've entered the natural mind. And you were kind of talking about that. So like even like a 1 second, you know, breath hold where you're kind of like just, you know, you inhale for seven, maybe that's the prescription. You hold for 1 second, then you exhale for seven, you hold for one. Even in that 1 second hold, you know, you get very still. And if you hold longer, you can get really still. And so that actually is a chance to access this awakened mind. So the non-conditioned mind. So the rainbow body is on the mental level is that awakened mind. Mm-hmm. So any practices that are moving you in that direction is or helping you to access that more and more. And so you first, they call it pointing out, like in a lot of the Dzogchen transmissions, the teacher will sort of kind of say like, you know, this is the awakened mind. So it's almost like pointing out red if you've never seen, if not that you've never seen red, but you haven't identified red as what you're looking for. So if I go into this room and then walk out and then, you know, Katie's out there and she's doing the experiment. She says, okay, how many things in the room were red? You actually, at a super conscious, subconscious level, did pick up everything that's red, but you just weren't looking for it. So it'd be I don't know, maybe someone's shoes. But if she's like, okay, go in there and find all the things that are red. Now you know what to look for, you know, and then boom, you could name 20 things or probably almost everything that's red, even with 1 minute scan. It's the same thing with the natural mind. It's not that we've forgotten, but sometimes you don't know what it is you're looking for. It's kind of like I kind of gave some intellectual examples. So maybe you've remembered now, but they'll try to do that as a transmission. And just to give you an idea of what they might do, they'll be talking and all of a sudden they'll like hit their hand, like really like that. And you're like, oh, you're like, they scare you. And in that moment of being scared, that first moment where you're shocked, you're in the natural state of mind. You've stopped your thinking. And then of course you come back, like, oh my God, you know, then you're back to the commentator. But so that might be a way they point out, they do that, what's called pointing out. Okay, there's other ways that can happen. So that's kind of half of the rainbow body. It's really acclimating yourself to that state of consciousness. Okay, so to put that into context, so then you could have that awakened state, but then you could still, your bodies, your vehicles may not really be filled with divine light. Like you could imagine someone or yourself achieving that, but maybe in their spiritual practice, they haven't really been doing like pranayama or things to change their etheric body. It's still kind of maybe dense, or maybe it got dense from what they ate or just being, you know, like I was kind of referring to like a polluted etheric environment. So they haven't done practices to transform their etheric body or their pranic body. So in a sense, their etheric body isn't awakened with a lot of divine light, even though their consciousness can be completely, you know, could even be in a non-dual state. And then finally, their physical body could also not really be filled with a lot of divine light yet. So you could see like how these don't all, just because you have an awakened mind doesn't mean those other vehicles have been transformed with a lot of divine energy. You might have to do certain things to like bring divine light into that. So that's what these practices are doing, from all the way from the astral body, filling that with light, down to the etheric body, transforming that, and then down to the physical body, even all the way to the physical. And it's probably not a one incarnation task. So if you think, man, I've got a long ways to go, and let's see, my timeline is, you know, we're not even going to start this thing, because yeah, this is no, it's probably because anything you do in your subtle bodies, I call it subtle bodybuilding, you carry on to other lifetimes. Like the people here, everyone here, probably in some ways has been working on this, or you wouldn't, you know, be interested in the topic. Usually it's so like out there, like really, that, you know, when I think about some of these things I'm talking about, I'm like, oh my gosh. But, you know, maybe I have my pre-Yale days, or like, you know, when I was thinking of, like, in science, I was like, oh my gosh. But no, you would most likely you've done it in another lifetime or had some resonance with it. So any work you're doing to transform your bodies, you do carry in like a kind of like a spiritual gene. I've talked about it in other places, like a spiritual genetic code that you carry on to, like, if you choose to reincarnate, so you can kind of continue to, the work. So, okay, let me pause there and see if there's any questions up to there. Okay, you know, this may be, because it's kind of is transmission based. It's not Tibetan transmission based. It's really your higher self. So we may take a little bit of a break and move to the transmission, because then you're going to get the, you know, like the download from your guides, like how would you do it? And they probably also will download, like, how does my system really understand what we'll go through? Because this is just, it's not so much an intellectual, although you want to understand what these mantras and things are doing. I think I put it in the context, it would be like the sound version. There's also the light version. You know, we're also doing things with light, so you can see how that works. And then also the rays, there's ways, you know, sharing the light. So yeah, so let me leave one thing. I have shared this already, but now you'll see how to do it in a comprehensive practice. I learned this from Jerry Allen Johnson, who's like a Taoist master teacher. He's also a Qigong teacher, acupuncturist, martial artist. So he's kind of has, and he's a part of two Taoist lineages. So he's kind of really, he has that kind of connection and have been taught these practices. And he also teaches a form of esoteric Buddhism, where he had the most, where I found at least, or was able to find kind of the most public version of at least how to do a rainbow body practice. There's, like I said, there's things as you get more personal with the teachers, they'll kind of, that dark retreat is very, at that point, you're kind of very personally connected to that lineage and that teacher, but it is publicly offered, those things. So I think it's definitely getting out there and available. But what I wanted to refer to was, where is it here? On mine, I know I shifted it around, but it's the five element mudras. But let me go over that, because that can be very helpful. So, you know, we do a lot of things with our consciousness, and then we, you know, maybe we're just meditating, and then we do a lot of things with the chakras. And I've been slowly moving this, as people have taken some of the classes, into the power of these like hand positions, which are very powerful. People who study the channels, you know, each of the meridians, there's a meridian that ends on each of the fingers. So they're almost like light switches, energetic light switches. Has anyone studied mudras? You know, there's different like full blown mudras.
Not like really studied them, but I'm
there. Okay, you're familiar. Yeah, that you can hold that put you in a certain state of consciousness. So there's ones that are activated for the elements. And like I mentioned, the source is from Jerry Allen Johnson's tradition. It's probably a Buddhist Taoist source. But he was saying, like, this isn't really very revealed that much. So, but I guess he got this sign. Actually, I think he got sick or he broke his leg. And he realized if he doesn't like put this out in the public, because there's always this kind of idea of secrecy. I don't know if people have been any lineages, you know, he's like, if I don't like share this, no one's going to really benefit if I keep following this secrecy idea. So he's been putting out quite a lot of esoteric information publicly so that people can benefit and that people can share it with other people. Mm-hmm. Jerry Allen Johnson. Yeah. Jerry Allen Johnson. Maybe I'll put that in his name in the chat, just so people in the chat, it's kind of like what it sounds like, but Jerry. Okay, so now when we do a lot of these mantras, so the way which we aren't going to go into detail right here, we'll get the transmission. I think that will help with that. You can hold the hand position, so it's like another component. And then while you're imagining the light, like in that, like a in. So there'll be a practice. So I'm kind of preempting the practice. We're not going over it right now, but just to give you an idea. So the sound for space is A, like E-H-A. And then the mantra, if you just wanted to work on the space element, you'll see it later, is A-ho-shude-shude. So you kind of make that tone, and those are Sanskrit sounds. So eho shude shude. So then what you're doing, so that's for space. So then in one version, you can transform your space element. You just start all of, you just start at the heart chakra. You don't go to the organ. You just start at the heart chakra. And then from there, you imagine lapis lazuli blue, because space in this framework, the color or the element of light. So eho shude shude is the sound element. And then the light element that transforms is you imagine a dark blue light, and it's emanating out of your heart to all like your subtle bodies. You could imagine it filling up your body. So that would be like a practice. So you're repeating eho shude shude. You don't even, and then after a while you could say it silently. Since we're here, what the understanding of that is, A is the Sanskrit term EH for space. Ho means infinity. And then shude shude means purify, purify, purify. So you're basically, you know, repeating kind of, if I were to change it into English, although English doesn't have the vibrational per se, probably in this framework, you'd be saying space, infinite space, purified, purified. Yeah, that kind of is nice. That's a nice affirmation. But that's basically what the meaning of that is. Okay, so then what you do, so you would be saying the sound, mantra would be the sound, vibrating it. You'd be doing the light coming out of your heart chakra. So that's the light element. If you were in the beginning, you just see it fill your body. So you're transforming your body. If you were then were to start to see it radiating out, which you could towards the like second half of the whatever practice, into the universe, like transforming the space element, that would be the principle of rays. Now, so then what do you do with the hand mudra is the space element is the thumb on both hands. So the thumb is your space element. And just to finish this off, so space element is thumb, and then going to more dense, so your pointing finger, that would be the wind or air element. Then the middle finger, and I have it written there, so just in case you want to have that for your notes, the middle finger is fire. And I know some people have heard this, but maybe not in the context of the full practice or like a more extended practice. Then the ring finger is the water element. And then the pinky finger is your earth element. So it's sort of like if you held, you know, sometimes they have this lotus. Yeah, the secret meaning of the lotus is you have the five elements there. Yeah, the earth is here, then water, fire, then air or wind, and then finally space at the thumb. So when you want to fire off or activate, let's say the earth element, you actually use the thumb and then the four fingers. So like if this is earth element, the pinky, then the mudra is using your thumb and you hold it like this. So you're activating earth element. So whenever we do a practice now, like I kind of shared that without having the full, sort of not putting in the full practice. But now if you're doing the mantra for earth, plus seeing like the earth is yellow, that's the light. You can do this one at a time, like I'm kind of over, you know, but it's kind of like, you know, first when you learn the tennis serve, you just kind of like kind of keep going like this, and then you put the, you know, add the throwing up the ball and so forth. But anyways, you would, if you're working on earth element and you want to add the mudra, then it would be like holding the pinky finger with the thumb. Now, how do you do the space element? Because I was giving the example for space in the full practice. The space element, you take your thumb, because that's space, you put it kind of right here on this pad. So then this is the mudra for space. That's the only one that, because it's the thumb that usually is the connector for the other four elements. So then it's like, how do you do the thumb now? Because the thumb is the space element. You just put it like that. So then, and we're going to go through this slowly, but how would you do that practice, like the one that starts from the heart? So back to the sound. So it's a ho shude shude is the mantra. So that's what you would say, or you could say it silently even. So I'm saying a ho shude shude, and I'm feeling that vibration, and I'm seeing blue, dark blue radiate out of my heart. So a ho shude shude, it's filling up my full body. And then you're holding this mudra at the same time. So that will kind of boost it even more energetically. So eho shude shude. And then you're sort of just seeing it first fill your body. And then at a certain point, you can start to see that light radiating not only into your body, but out into the environment, out into the universe. So that would be the rays. Okay, so I'm sort of giving some context of how these practices work. And then there's a version of that for every element for the, so which we'll kind of see, we'll kind of get at least one of the full practices done where we can kind of do that. And there are actually a couple practices that are all versions of that. That's sort of what they call purifying the elements from inside out. So you're starting with the kind of rays inside you, going out. And then I think I was talking with Sid yesterday, and you were probably doing what you were sharing with me was a version from outside in, is that you can go physically, or you could even do by distance, to a beautiful place that's representative of that element. And then you absorb that element into you. And so you're purifying from outside in. So how that might work, let me use another element. Like with, I was thinking about it actually, if I was here on Hawaii, where I would go, because there's like a mountain like right here. So you do this outside in practice, like for the earth element with mountains. So you could go to any mountain that you feel drawn to kind of in the world. You could also do it by distance, but like there's this beautiful mountain just like right up here. And then you just sort of are in front of it. And then in that case, without going through the full practice, you use the same mantra that we'll get to for the earth element, which is Lam. Lam is for earth. And then so you say Lam Ho Shude Shude. Then you actually see like gold or yellow, because that's earth, prana or particles coming from the mountain and filling your body. So that's another version, but you can see like I'm just sort of setting up these practices without kind of going through the details quite yet, but you're going from outside in, you're absorbing like a beautiful source of earth element into your body.
What if you live on a mountain?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Then you're even greater. Like you're kind of already in the etheric body of the mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. But here it's perfect as that practice. Like we did spoon bending here too. So a lot of people have taken spoon bending, but you know how, like I said, you could take the energy from above your head and send it into the white light. You could go down below. And then I said, but anything in the, like a lake, you could draw its prana.
Right.
That's what this practice is, because for the water element, they suggest finding a beautiful lake and pulling that. Basically, it's like drawing that prana into you as you say the mantra. So it's like the light of that source of water is filling you, which is exactly what we were doing, filling the utensil with a certain types of prana.
And the water even works better than being
killed. And the ocean.
We have it all.
You have it all here. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It's kind of nice to be doing it here on Hawaii. But, every place has their beautiful versions of the elements. So you can, think of that. We'll go over that practice too. I think that's a really beautiful and also energetically charged practice to draw the element from outside in. But, infinite. Yeah, infinite. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the formula, is each element has a Sanskrit mantra. Maybe I'll say them here. So it's space is A, and it's also written down. Maybe it's on the first page. So A is space. So then in that kind of mantra code, it's like you put the element Sanskrit sound, and then you say ho shude shude. So you say infinite purity, purify, purify. So for space it's A, and then for wind it's or air it's yam. So you said would be yam ho shude shude, and it's all kind of written out in long form, but if you know the code, then you got I got it. So, or you can remember it much more easily. Then fire is ram ram. So ram ho shude shude would be the fire element mantra or tone. And then calm is the water. So it's calm, just so that you've heard these. Calm ho shude shude. Sometimes they use vam. You might see that in case you start like investigating. They sometimes use vam for water. So you could use either of those two Sanskrit tones. But I've been, tones, but I've been using calm here. That was kind of the one that was taught to me more. So maybe that's why I draw it to that. And then, but Vam is a possibility you could use for water, and the color is white. And then finally, Lam is earth. So Lam Ho Shude Shude. So you, if you kind of get the code, then you don't have to memorize it. You kind of at least know the structure. This is very straightforward. Okay. Yeah, let's do the break, and then so we kind of get the more energetic download from the higher dimensions and tone, and then maybe also your specific way. If this is a type of practice you feel drawn to, you can do it here, but you also will get encoded with your specific way. And there's kind of like a Arcturian version kind of coming down. It's not like in this particular class here. Maybe some people heard me. I think I was talking with Amanda on her telesummit recently. And that's kind of like there's an Arcturian version of the rainbow elements. So you could work with the Arcturians. You could just ask them, can you bring that energy to purify my space element? So, yeah, they're still here. Our good friends, the Arcturians. Okay. Let's take a 10-minute break. So we'll come back at 56 minutes after. And you can, however you like to receive the transmission. We'll do the transmission. Yeah, after the break. Yeah, so they get 10-minute break. Okay, thanks. Okay. Let me just say a couple words about the transmission. We're connecting with our guides and the divine. And I would say there are rainbow masters. They've been asked to be here present, meaning beings, human beings who have achieved rainbow body or a resurrection body, if you connect with the Christ being. And it doesn't have to be only within this tradition that I've been talking about with the Tibetan tradition or Bon. There's probably in all different traditions some version of this. It may not be as public or well known. But those masters have been asked specifically to come. And if you already have some that you can invite them to connect directly. And I'll just mention that we talked a little bit about lineage today. I've talked about in other contexts that people online have probably heard and thought about. But you could say that's the heart of the practice of these practices, depending on the tradition. But I called it like the Ethernet, the internet. Like, maybe your computer is useful. Meaning metaphorically you have practices, but once you really have internet, you kind of really are, you can really expand what you can do. So when you're connected to a certain lineage or you have your guides or your teachers, it doesn't have to even be a formal lineage, but you're kind of being assisted by some being who you may already have a karmic connection with, who's achieved a certain state through resonance. It kind of pulls you up there faster. And in these traditions, basically that's what's happening. They do, it's called guru yoga, but usually when you start these esoteric practices in Buddhism, that could be your only practice, they even say. Like, you don't even have to do these advanced practices, because if you're always like Padmasambhava, people have heard of Padmasambhava, and one of his partners was Yeshe Chogyal, his spiritual partner. I have to see if Yeshe Chogyal, she probably achieved rainbow body too, but Padmasambhava achieved rainbow body, and his teacher was Vimala Mitra. He, in that incarnation, achieved rainbow body. So like in the Nyingma sect, lineage, they would like see Padmasambhava and then actually imagine Padmasambhava or Yeshe Chogyal, or even together in union, kind of turning into a ball of light and then like absorbing that into their system. So in a sense, you're going into deep resonance with a being that's already achieved rainbow body. So you would be downloading that into your system without having to do all the hard work of, all the genes telling me to do lights every day, green lights, red lights. You're like, oh, God. And then is it time for lunch? You can just do guru yoga, not some version of connecting with your mentor and like accelerate the process. Okay. Well, enough jokes. There was a reason for talking about that. But okay, we'll do the transmission, kind of see. It'll probably be at least 30 minutes. Kind of we'll see where the time is here.